From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is a special pledge drive episode of Reveal. I'm Al Letson. Each week, it's pretty much a guarantee that if we're reporting on a story, there's someone who wishes we weren't. Our investigations often uncover crimes forgotten to history, waiting for justice. Today, we want to share with you a story that stands out to us. It's 1936, and the police in Atlanta have tracked down an African-American man accused of raping a white woman. His name was Thomas Finch. When police find him early one morning in bed, they arrest Finch and take him into custody. But instead of taking him to the police station, an hour later, they drop him off at a local hospital. He'd been beaten and shot dead. Police claim they acted in self-defense, but a local civil rights group ruled it was a lynching. Reporter Stephanie Stokes of WABE in Atlanta investigated how stories like this one continue to divide communities today. Stephanie begins by learning everything she can about the officer who killed Thomas Finch. His name was Samuel Roper.
It isn't that hard to trace the life and career of Samuel Roper. He served in the Atlanta Police Department, then moved up the ladder, way up the ladder, to lead the Georgia Bureau of Investigation, making him the state's top law enforcement officer. After that, in the late 1940s, he took over the national leadership of the Ku Klux Klan. I look up Roper's obituary, and from there, I'm able to find his grandson, Kent Giles. We talk a few times. He's never heard of Thomas Finch, and he's reluctant to do an interview. But after he goes over my research, he agrees, and I drive to his house in Marble Hill, a rural area north of Atlanta. Kent is ready for me. He's arranged all the documents I gave him on his dining room table, along with a small pad where he's written down notes. He's friendly, but when I turn on the recorder, the room feels a little tense.
So you were kind of nervous about being misrepresented in this story. I was curious, would you want to talk about that at all?
Well, I just think that there's always a risk by association. I think most people understand that none of us are our ancestors. If we go far enough back, we all have ancestors that did things good and bad.
Kent says he knew his grandfather. Roper lived until he was 90. They would talk about his service in the First World War and his career in law enforcement, and eventually, the Klan. Kent says his grandfather only joined to get ahead in politics. He remembers asking about the violence the hate group is known for.
And I said, you know, when you were head of the KKK, which was actually, I think he was a Grand Imperial Wizard, maybe a total of a year to 18 months, so it wasn't very long. He said that he never condoned lynching. And newspapers report him as saying that, you know, we will consider our political activism for white supremacy, but we will not, you know, condone violence.
I saw an article where Roper said the Klan did not condone violence. But I tell Kent about another article, one where the Klan was accused of bombing the homes of black families in Atlanta. Roper was in charge then. Kent says his grandfather blamed that kind of violence on fringe members. He compares his grandfather to Georgia Governor Eugene Talmadge. He was a Klan sympathizer who, by the way, fought to keep black people from voting.
Now, there's no question their politics was segregationist. It was white supremacist. They were staunchly anti-communist. Most of the things that I understood about them and about that era were political things.
So what does Kent make of Thomas Finch's case then? We look at the report I found by a civil rights group called the Commission on Interracial Cooperation. The commission's work isn't widely known today, but in the early part of the 20th century, it fought against lynching, along with groups like the NAACP, although the commission's leaders were mainly white.
Yeah, it's a lot of detail, but...
He says he agrees with the commission that there are aspects of the case that seem off, like the police arresting Thomas at 3 a.m., while the commission saw all this as a police-sponsored lynching, Kent comes to a very different conclusion.
What I read into this event is that the police were concerned that there was going to be a lynching or some kind of activity either by the accuser's family or some racist group in town.
In other words, Kent believes his grandfather was trying to protect Thomas Finch from a mob, not conspiring with one. Then he thinks Thomas tried to escape and reached for his grandfather's gun. This is what the officers claimed at the time. Still, Kent says he can totally see why others might side with the commission's account. I tell him, yeah.
for a lot of people, right, if they hear that there was a case that from the 1930s that a civil rights group said was probably a lynching, and then they hear that the shooter involved was later the leader of the Ku Klux Klan in the South, they're probably going to feel pretty certain about what happened, that it was a lynching, right? I mean, would you tell those people that they're wrong?
Well, I think that, I think all of us have to be honest and say we're viewing the world through certain filters. So I would say to them, you know, I'm viewing this through as much truth as I can find, which there's a lot of missing pieces, and through the filters of a man I knew. The only thing I can say truthfully is I don't know what really happened, and I don't think we're ever going to really know what happened.
Thomas Finch died more than 80 years ago. None of the witnesses are alive. Still, there's one more person I'm interested in, Ozella Smith. She's the white woman who told police that Thomas Finch raped her. I have a little trouble tracking her after the case. She died in the 1980s with a different first name. I managed to locate her niece, Dolores Sharp. She agrees to meet me at a library near her home in Peachtree City, south of Atlanta. Like Kent Giles, Dolores is cautious. We spend a couple of hours going over documents before she's okay to talk on the record. Dolores says she grew up around her aunt. She saw her anytime she went over to her grandma's house. Ozella Smith lived there. She never married.
When did you first hear the story that I called you about?
Oh, I was a young girl when I was told that my aunt was raped by a black person at the hospital. I never really knew a lot of details, and because it was taboo to talk about, you didn't bring it up. And I don't know why. I was mature in a sense that I felt like maybe it was something that I didn't need to plunder into.
She says the assault was just too painful for her family to talk about.
Oh, I think it was maybe a major event that permanently scarred the heart and the mind of the members that were closest to my aunt.
I can hear the conviction in her voice when she talks about this family history, so I'm not surprised when Dolores is disturbed when she reads the commission's conclusion that Thomas Finch was wrongfully accused. The implication is that her aunt lied about the assault.
When you hear something contrary to what you grew up believing, you might even go on a defense of that, or you might take the attitude that she was just completely discarded, that her, what happened to her was completely irrelevant.
I have a lot more questions for Dolores, but we're interrupted. A Peachtree City librarian motions through the glass of the study room. Our time is up. Dolores asks me if we can reschedule, but weeks go by, and she never does agree to another meeting. This isn't what I expected to hear from the other families. Somehow, after all my research, I thought there might be consensus on how we should look at Thomas's case. But there isn't. I talked to Catherine Meeks. She's a former African-American studies professor who now directs the Absalom Center for Racial Healing in Atlanta.
I've realized that I was just so naive going into this that I was so surprised to have disagreement about something that happened 80 years ago. And I just wondered if we can't agree about that, like, what can we agree about now?
We don't agree about the history. We don't agree about the written history of the United States.
Professor Meeks says lynching in particular is a point of shame.
That's one piece of the history that we've tried the hardest to ignore. We'll talk about slavery, we'll talk about Jim Crow, we'll talk about Reconstruction, but we don't really want to talk about lynching.
Many places in Georgia still don't want to talk about lynchings, even though there were more lynchings here than in any other state except Mississippi. There are exceptions. A couple of years ago, I drove out to a small city called LaGrange, where the police chief had called a community meeting. 200 people crowded into a Methodist church. Chief Lou Dekmar spoke about Austin Calloway, who was killed in 1940 when a mob stormed the city jail.
I sincerely regret and denounce the role our police department played in Austin's lynching, both through our action and our inaction. And for that, I'm profoundly sorry. It should never have happened.
His comments received a standing ovation and drew national attention. But in Thomas Finch's case, it doesn't seem like authorities have any plans to apologize. I let the city of Atlanta and the police department know about what I found. I sent emails, even registered letters. Would they acknowledge his case as a lynching? Atlanta's police chief, Erica Shields, wouldn't talk to me. The office of Mayor Keisha Lance Bottoms only gave a short written statement. It says the city has no official record of Thomas's case, but there is no denying that Atlanta, quote, still wears scars from the deep wounds inflicted during that dark chapter of history. And this surprises me too. Atlanta's very different now. The all-white power structure is gone. It's had black mayors for decades, and the police force is majority black. But when it comes to Thomas Finch's case, they still have little to say. I ask Catherine Meeks about this.
Well, I just think it's denial of the history. I think it's they don't want to take responsibility. They may even be worried that if they say something, they will be admitting to some culpability that might leave them in legal trouble.
Meek says it doesn't matter if the people in power have changed. The institutions still need to recognize what happened.
It's not as important for me for somebody to go stand up in front of a microphone and say, I'm sorry, as it is for them to really be awake, to really understand, and to really do something. But if you're doing all of that, you probably don't mind saying you're sorry.
For now, the most public acknowledgement of Thomas Finch's death is still in another state, the place where I first came across his name, the Memorial for Lynching Victims in Montgomery, Alabama. Several months after we first met, I joined Joyce Finch Morris at the memorial. Joyce is Thomas Finch's niece. She helped me understand what happened to Finch when I first started looking into the case. She's on a civil rights tour with a couple of friends. We walk down into the lower level of the main pavilion, past a wall with streaming water. Hundreds of steel columns shaped like coffins are hanging above us. They're organized by the counties where the lynchings happened.
Forsyth County.
Joyce is moving quickly. She seems anxious, almost excited. We find the column that includes Atlanta. It's so high above us that Joyce strains to make out the names of the victims etched on the column.
Can you see it?
I really can't. And actually, that might be good because I don't want to start crying.
So my photographer takes a picture of Thomas's name and enlarges it on the screen of his camera.
So just to give you context, mm-hmm. It's the bottom right mm-hmm. here.
Thomas Finch.
She and her friend stare at the image. Then Joyce approaches me.
I'm really reserved most of the time when I hold my feelings in. I never knew my uncle, but I can pass this along to my family members, the ones who are still alive, and to my grandkids. And
she pauses, like she's taking in what's around her. Her uncle's name among more than 4,000 other African Americans who were lynched in this country.
I mean, this is history. I mean, he's memorialized. And he's not forgotten. I didn't even know him. I really didn't. But it's important.
We step outside the pavilion and see another set of the columns lined up on the ground. They're duplicates. The people behind the memorial want to send them to the counties where the lynchings happened, sort of like historical markers. In Atlanta, there's a private group working to make that happen. It would finally bring Thomas Finch public recognition in the city where he was killed more than 80 years ago. After spending all this time on his case, I can't say how that effort will be received.
Stephanie Stokes is a reporter with public radio station WABE in Atlanta. Her story was edited by David Lewis, investigations editor at WNYC, and was produced as part of a collaboration with APM Reports. That's a lot of acronyms. Because here at Reveal, we work with a lot of news organizations to bring you groundbreaking journalism. Now, it's time for you to do your part to support this type of work. Here's how.